The following Stealing the Mind of America presentation by Tom Cloud is entitled Y2K and Your Financial Future. For a complete audio and video teaching tape catalog, call Compass at 1-800-977-2177.
Good. I'm going to start you off with a little story that happened to me 14 years ago riding on an airplane from Brazil back to Atlanta. I hope some of you don't think it's a little risque, but you'll find it a point that we'll develop as we go along today, and that is communication. I had been down in Brazil visiting some gemstone mines. It was about 110 degrees every day, and I decided to come back a day early, and I was on standby at the Rio airport. And I kept waiting all day thinking I was going to get on the plane. And finally, a seat opened up at 5 to 11 at night, and they told me I could clear. I was going to be the last one to get on. So I was real excited until I got on the plane and found out where my seat was. I went on and sat literally on the side, the three seats on the side. I was in the middle, and the lady on the right had just gotten cut from the American field hockey team 1 month before the Olympics, and she was very, very upset. And the other lady on the other side was sick, and she was trying to fly back home, had been down there working, and that was the way it started off. So it got pretty interesting, and we were talking about communications, and she was upset, not that she didn't make the field hockey team, but the way it was communicated to her. She said, "We don't communicate well," and I said, "I agree with you." I said, "Communications is everything, and I do try to communicate in detail." So while we're having this great going back and forth about communications, they bring the food through, and by now it's about 4 o'clock in the morning. We're getting near Miami, and the lady that's been sick spills all of her food in my lap. The whole thing. So with this lady on the right, we've got her settled down a little bit, and the lady on my left now spilled the food on me. And all between this, I'm sitting on the Wall Street Journal, waiting to read it. I'm waiting to read it as we enter because I haven't seen one in about 10 days. So this guy comes through from first class back, and he looks at me and he says, "Sir, are you reading the Wall Street Journal?" And I thought about it, and I stood straight up, turned the page, sat down, and said, "Yes." And I think it communicated the point to him very well, that we do need to communicate better. Before we launch into the PowerPoint presentation, we've got to go back and do a little homework over the last 3 years we've been together. We have been in a deflationary environment that I first told you about in 1985. Everybody doubted it. Nobody believed me. Everybody wants to think inflation. But I told you that time we were in a secular interest rate decline that had gone on since 1980. Never in the history of America if we had interest rates go down for 18 years in a row as we have now in 1998. There has been one exception, and that was the ugly debacle that happened in Orange County, California, between the middle of 1994 and the middle of 1995, when we had that one interest rate surge that caused the derivative wipeout in Orange County. Today, money markets are still heavy laden with derivatives because they're waiting on interest rates to continue down. And as I stand here today, as you know, the clients that I've developed over the years, I have never wavered in 3 years that interest rates are going down until we have a deflationary recession that I believe will start, I told you 3 years ago in 1998, but I believe it will probably be 1999 or maybe early in the year 2000. But the point is, most of you have accumulated everything you have over the last 18 years, or at least a large percentage of it, and you've gotten used to an environment that's existed with interest rates going straight down, and every municipality, every bond, every corporate bond, everybody in the world has been able to get anything financed that they want financed because fixed income products have done so well while interest rates have been declining. So you look at it and you say, well, when is this going to end? And I think we've got another 18 months. We've stood here every year. I've showed you graphs of interest rates every year and told you why they were going to go down the next 12 months, and every year they have. And I'm going to tell you again today, before we meet again next year, interest rates are going lower and fixed income products are going to go higher, and do not let falling interest rates ruin your ability to identify that that's good for real estate, because it's not. We're at the end of an 8-year growth cycle since the last recession in 1991 during the George Bush recession, and now we're out 8 years. The economy last quarter was cut to 1.6% growth for the second quarter, which is only 0.4%. Now, that's from an economy that was steaming along the first quarter at 3% or 3.4%. So we've got to remember, just because interest rates are going down, and we're going to communicate this very clearly, does not mean the stock market and real estate market are going to go up. As I read the newspaper this morning at the hotel and read the Denver paper, the headlines of the paper is, real estate has hit an all-time high in Denver literally at the end of July. All-time recorded history of Denver, Colorado, the real estate market has hit a new high. And the reason is because the interest rates have been going down. People buy houses based on what they can afford, the payment, and therefore it goes into the principal, and therefore if you're a house seller, you're getting a big premium on your house because of that. So it's very important that you not be deceived as we go into this period of time where interest rates have fallen literally off the shelf over the last few weeks. We have had the long-term treasury that started. Now listen to this very carefully. In 1980, at the end of Jimmy Carter's administration, the 30-year long-term treasury bond was 18.75%. By 1 month ago, it was down to 5.75. And in all the conference calls I was doing with you, I was telling you, move into bonds, move into fixed income products, and continue to do that because you have as much upside as stocks with a lot less downside. But now we've watched the long-term treasury literally fall 54 basis points since July the 18th when the stock market took its first hit. We have seen the bond market go up in double digits in 1 month, and all you read about is the stock market, and the bond market has been in this huge bull market and not the stock market. And yet we have had clients calling just unbelievable to them that they've been making this kind of return in the bond market, and we'll get to that a little later. But what we want to do today is get the most specific I've ever gotten with you, because I believe that we are entering this time where the Y2K problem, we still have time to adjust our portfolios, do our homework, read the websites, get the information, attend seminars, read everything you can possible, and make your own decision. We don't have time on the Asian crisis, the Russian crisis, and other things that are unfolding. And I'm going to come back to them as we get toward the end of the presentation. But the one thing I hope that each of you realize, and I think you do by being here, is that 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7, tells us, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." God doesn't want us to fear what's coming up. He wants us prepared, and He wants us to use a sound mind and not a reactive mind to go in there because some telemarketing company has called you and tried to scare you into buying whatever product they're selling. You've got to use a sound mind and do a little homework and make some tough decisions on your own, because it is your money. And as Chuck had in his presentation this morning, Proverbs 22:3, "A prudent man sees danger and takes refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer for it." Probably no time in the last 6 weeks would that be more true than to hear people calling me, and that was before Thursday when the stock market went down 357 points and then 115 points on Friday. We are now down 14.1% since July the 18th. Now, most of you know that are clients of mine, I gave you a sales signal to get out of the stock market July 16th. We cut the exposure from 50% in stocks to 15% in stocks, and most of those were gold stocks. So many of you are used to that. Where is the stock market going from now, and where has it gone? As we look at the stock market storms, from squalls to tornadoes, we look at the declines of 5, 10, 15, and 20% over the last 100 years. And if you look at the number of times since 1900, let's go out and look at the 15%, because remember what I just told you. Since the 9,336 top on July the 18th, we have now seen the market decline to 8,041 for a 14.1% decrease. And if we only go 0.9% next week, we will then up the probability of a bear market from 27% to 58%, and we haven't had a 15% decline since October of 1990. But those two numbers to your left that are highlighted in red, the routine decline of 5% and the moderate decline of 10% have happened this month in August 1998. So we know that the probability is going up for a bear market. So we now say, if we get to around 7,400, which would be an official bear market, a 20% decline, I think very easily the stock market could go down to 4,200 to 5,000 by the time the Y2K starts making a factor in addition to the other problems that we currently have. So as you look at this graph, hopefully it'll sink in that probably by the end of next week, we will have a 58% probability of a bear market headed our direction. As we look at it, the thing that's my biggest pet peeve is there's 411,000 stockbrokers in America today. Approximately 300,000 of those stockbrokers have never seen a bear market. They have come on employment with the major brokerage firms since 1990 in the last major recession. And they're taught they never give a sales signal. It's always buy and hold. And when you call saying, my money, I've lost 15%, I want to get out, they talk you into putting more money in the market. Please do not let them talk you into it, because this next graph alone should show you that if you made 11% return 1 year and 11% return a second year, and your 10,000 went to 12,300, or your 100,000 to 123,000, if you get one severe correction of 15%, it then brings you down to a total return of only 1.5% for 3 years. How many of you today, I don't want you to raise your hands, realize that the stock market for 1998 is only up 141 points? That's it, because of what's happened in the last week. That's how quick this picture, just as graphically as you can look at anything, shows you what has happened in the last month to 6 weeks, and why a buy and hold strategy is not the right strategy. We'll get to what is the right strategy in a few minutes. So as we look at an economic analysis of the last bear market, that many economists feel the one in 1973 and 1974 will be the one that's the closest related to what we're getting ready to look at. I think it could be a little more severe, but I think this is the best that we have to look back in history. That one was caused by the oil embargo. We can remember oil selling for $1.50 a barrel, going all the way to $35 a barrel. The long lines at service stations in California were on TV every night. We had President Nixon under siege and resigning as president. We had the end of the Vietnam War. And we had a loss in the S&P that year, 1973, of 15%. And every stockbroker at that time told you it had bottomed and please buy more. But by the end of 1974, we had lost another 27% in the stock market. And at that point, we had a 42% compounded loss in the stock market during the bear market of 1973 and 1974. The average mutual fund at the time lost 48%. And at that time, this is hard for you to believe, there were only about 400 mutual funds, and about 4,000 stocks. Today, there's about 8,000 stocks and 9,800 mutual funds. Everybody has a game. Everybody has a way to manage your money. But see, what they're doing is they're buying. They don't have a sales strategy. So we look at this and we realize that the next bear market could be underway even before Y2K, which is a certainty, comes. We look at what is going to happen, and I believe the last half of 1998 through the year 2002 could be a possible recession. There again, I'm basing this off my technical work and my fundamental work, which to me is more important than the technical work, so it is a possible range, something to consider. What's going to cause this one? We're going to have an information embargo that Chuck so eloquently told you about in the last presentation. He told you for over an hour about an information embargo that we have headed our way. And how about an infrastructure cascading failures? I think my biggest pet peeve outside of the stockbrokers telling you to put more money in is being when I have people call me and say, well, Mr. Cloud, I'm just so thankful that my bank is Y2K compliant and my brokerage firm is, and I'm just very lucky that I'm with one of those Y2K compliant companies. A Y2K compliant company has many definitions. Take the one that you want, but the two most common are, we can generate you a statement in January of the year 2000 that will say that you have money in your account, a brokerage account, or you have money in our bank. Now, if you call that Y2K compliant, I think that most banks and brokerage firms will be Y2K compliant. But if you ask me, can a company do business today tomorrow, meaning January the 1st, 2000, as they do business today, the answer is unequivocally no. And I talk, and I can't use their names because of an arrangement I have with them, but I do consulting for a major corporation in this country. I mean, somebody you use every day. They have just told their second-tier distributors that they're going to have to spend $2 million to buy the hardware that they want them to have if they're going to keep being a distributor. Now, I mean, this is unbelievable. Here's a businessman sitting there one day, and they're saying, if you want to keep doing business with us, we like you, we want to keep you as a vendor, but you've got to update your hardware and software to mesh with ours. So will these companies be Y2K compliant? The answer is simply no, and let me tell you one good example before we move on. I get wires in from all over the world, Germany, Thailand, Japan, all over the world we get wires coming in. Now, we know what's going on in Asia. We know what's going on in Japan. These people have no money to run their banks, much less do Y2K compliancy. So what happens is the money slows down worldwide. Remember the old velocity we've talked about over the years? Every dollar that goes through the Federal Reserve multiplies out about 6.5 times. Money by decree, fiat currency, whatever you want to call it, perceived money, they make it out of thin air. But they do that by taking a dollar and loaning it to you, putting 15 cents deposit with the Fed, and then loan it again, and when you get through, it creates $6.5. But what happens when I can't get a wire directly from Thailand? They send it to some big bank in Europe. They keep it a few days. They send it to a big bank in New York. I finally get my money 2 or 3 weeks later if everything works pretty good. So business, Coca-Cola in Atlanta, Georgia, where I'm from, is a tremendous, one of the greatest corporations in the world. 76% of their revenue comes from the foreign markets. And much of it comes from countries like China that have no compliancy whatsoever. So you look at it and you begin in your own mind to use your sound mind and realize there are some major problems out there. And political instability with the Nixon-Clinton relationship, possible impeachment, and I'm not ready to jump on the bandwagon and impeach. I respect the office of the presidency of this country. I may not respect the man that's in it, but I do respect the office. And I'm not ready. I'm ready to give the benefit of the doubt until Starr has finished his full report. But if we go back and look at the loss in 1998, as I stood in Seattle, Washington 3 weeks ago with Chuck Missler, Gordon McDonald, and Colin Christie, And we were doing our Y2K conference. Remember, the market had not dropped 500 points. And I was talking about a loss this year of 20% and possibly as much as 40. If you, the American public, realize you've got to preserve your wealth and you don't mind moving out and making a respectable return the next 18 to 30 months, you could have tremendous returns on the other side. So I think this year we could have a 20 to 40% loss in the stock market, but today it doesn't look near as crazy as it did 3 weeks ago. Loss in 2000, 2001 could be another 10 to 20%. I think it very much could be another 40 to 60% loss, as I said, similar to 1963. We love to time things in the economic world. Economists love to make little charts and do things. Well, this is a great little chart. It's called the first wave move of a bear market. And we look at the bear markets where there has been a 20% or more correction in the last 100 years. The first wave, you can see what the pre-crash high was, what the first phase low was, and what the percent decline was. Please remember, as you look at the last number, we're now down 14.1% and about another 320-point correction than what's on this actual slide that you're looking at. So that's the first wave. Then there should be a correction up as the stock brokerage firm goes after you, the public, and tells you it's a great buying opportunity, and you believe it, and you put your money in, the market moves back up 5% before the second wave comes in that will take it to a lower price. Dr. Ed Yardini, you heard about this morning through Chuck, is an economist that's very well respected, is now talking about a 70, and internally, as Chuck said, a 100% probability of a recession that we've been talking to you about for 3 years. This is a quote on July the 24th by Dr. Yardini. There are two kinds of people regarding Y2K, those who get it, the GIs, and those who don't get it, the DGIs. The GIs, like myself, are pessimistic about the eventual and inevitable outcome. I think most GIs subscribe to the following four logical points. There is a great deal at risk because computers have become so important to business and governments, we all depend on them. With so little time and so much left to fix, there are bound to be a significant disruption, malfunction, and crashes in computer systems, including some very vital ones. All systems that fail will do so at the same time. So there is no way that it will be business as usual in the year 2000 from an economic standpoint that we're talking about today. Many don't get it, believe that everything will be fixed in time because the consequences of failure are so grim. They have to be naive optimists, in my opinion. I am an optimist at heart also. However, I think I'm a realist, pessimist, and alarmist about Y2K. I'm not predicting doomsday, just a wicked global recession and a 30% drop in stock prices. Then there will be a great economic recovery starting in 2001, and the Dow Jones Industrials should go to a record 15,000 by the year 2005. So Dr. Yardini sees a light at the end of the tunnel if you can get defensive during that time if you follow his strategy. But today we've got to look at our money as God's money. We have a responsibility as the managers. We look at Psalms 24:1. The earth is the Lord's and all that it contains, the world and those who dwell in it. Not only everything that we have and manage, but ourselves belong to God. And hopefully we take that as a big enough challenge to do a little homework. And I don't care if you say, I don't like economics, I don't like numbers. It's your responsibility to dig into it a little bit. As my son can tell you, it's at my booth, and a certain Kenny over here at Audio Central, I'm computer illiterate, but I'm still trying. I'm still trying. So you've got to keep working in areas where you aren't strong, but don't just take anybody's recommendation. Since I started my company, Cloud & Associates, in 1974, I've had Ecclesiastes 11:2 on my brochure. Divide your portion to 7 or even to 8, for you do not know what misfortune or catastrophe will come upon the earth. King Solomon told us he wasn't smart enough, so a stockbroker in Kansas City, Missouri, is not smarter than Solomon was, in my opinion. So he was telling us way back then, we cannot not divide our wealth into different areas. Asset allocation, we've talked about, but ones that haven't heard it, there are two different policies that you can adopt on asset allocation. One is passive and one is active. Now, passive is where you just put your money in those seven or eight baskets, stocks, bonds, gold, money markets, fixed income products, real estate. You just divide it into five, six, seven baskets, and you adjust it every year by selling what's high and buying what's low. So your portfolio always adjusts itself and cost averages itself. And I believe that you can make a respectable return doing that. But we're in a time now where we've got to be more tactical. We've got to look at economic indicators like a secular interest rate decline, falling energy prices, and we've got to look at these falling interest rates, and we have to move our money into different categories and go a little heavier. We've got to put 40 or 50% into fixed income products because we don't want to take the risk. Now, Bill Perkins, who I want to thank again for this wonderful conference and watching it grow, said he wanted to be sure that we put out a scenario. They both looked at inflation and deflation because even though I'm a deflationist, doesn't mean I'm right. There are people out here that may subscribe to the Japanese are going to take all their money out. We're going to have to reprint it, create it out of thin air. Therefore, we're going to start creating money. There's going to be more money chasing the same amount of goods. And we've got the definition of inflation right out of the dictionary. And if that happens, what you want to do is be in T-bills. And no matter what anybody tells you, treasury bills are safe. As long as we have a United States of America, treasury bills are safe. Treasury bills have maturities of 3 months, 6 months, or 1 year. So you got to be careful to beat treasury bonds for 1 year to 30 years in maturity. And I believe that if we have inflation, treasury bills, gold and silver, precious metals, certainly energy stocks, and put options, and short selling strategies could make up the little teeny part at the top of a pyramid. But bad would be common stocks, bonds, especially what we used to call junk bonds. They now have a new name. They're now called high yield bonds. They had to come up with a new fancy name where you'd go back to buying them. Real estate will be a terrible asset, as we saw in 1990 and 91. As we saw in 1981 and 82, the people live in California saw it in 94 and 95, and you'll see it again if we have an inflationary environment, and most mutual funds, with the exception of a few sectors, will be a very bad place to be. If you buy into my deflation scenario that we're going to have the first deflationary contraction since the Great Depression, then what you want to look at is going in and putting your money into gold and silver. Remember, that's inflation and deflation. And during the Great Depression, gold went up 60% in 5 years because no one trusted the government. They wanted to hold their wealth. They didn't care if they made an income on it. They wanted to hold it and be sure they had it. And I think that's a good idea today. I think it's a very good idea today. Treasury bills, high quality, double A rated or better government bonds, especially zero coupon bonds, that can be very attractive with the falling interest rates that are going on, and of course putting a little bit of money into a short position that the stock market will go down, you can make quite a few times your investment. But don't risk more than you're willing to lose, and you have tremendous leverage there. Bad during a deflationary environment would be common stocks, especially growth and value. Corporation profits would plummet, and they would be going straight down during that kind of environment. We look at the common real estate investment trust, being in the mortgage business, most mutual funds except certain quality funds that would be maybe in the fixed income sector would do okay. Dr. Ed Yardini on his website, yardini.com, and that's Yardeni, for those listening that can't see the PowerPoint, is a wonderful website to visit. I visited every day, came out with this website, a recommendation for his asset allocation model. This, to me, is the most amazing thing I have seen in my 25-plus years in this industry, is to see the head economist of a Wall Street firm telling you to move 25% of your money into physical currency and gold coins that you are holding on you personally, where you're going through the potential Y2K problem. I like the Treasury bills more than the Treasury bonds. He likes the Treasury bonds, 10-year maturities. He's down to 15% in equities like I am. And I tell you, I put my model out prior to his. Speculative assets like equity puts, zero coupon bonds, there they are again. Commodity shorts, 20%. And risky investments like emerging markets, real estate investments, and commodities. My asset allocation model, well, let's look first. I had this thing jump back on me. My asset allocation model is in the book over there that we're giving out free, The Preserving Wealth, and you can pick it up over there at the table. Shows a 15 to 20% in stocks, gold mining stocks, 5% fixed income. But going on, moving down, I upped my movement into gold from 5% to 15% when all this was going on. And then we looked at 15 to 20% is the highest I've ever had allocated since 1979 and 1980, because I believe that gold at worst will go up 25% between now and the end of next year. And we'll get to that in a minute, even with the low prices we've seen on Friday with a 19-year low. Physical currency, I cannot tell you enough how important it is to me and the Cloud household that you have money out, and the reason is this. On Monday, you saw a shocking article in the paper when the Federal Reserve printed $50 billion new dollars. It made every newspaper in the country of new physical currency, because they're already getting a run on banks for the Y2K, and they want to be sure there's plenty of cash. That $50 billion now gets up to where there's about 17% physical cash available to every dollar deposited. So in other words, if every single person in America went to the banking system to get out their money and hold it physically through the year 2000, you would only get 17 cents on the dollar. Rest of it is fiat currency, money by decree, perceived wealth, nothing to back it except the good faith of the government. That's what the rest of it is. I strongly urge you to get your money out. The first wave of barter, when there is a problem, is going to be cash. Before you get into gold and silver, which is the second line of barter, you want cash. So get your cash out. Who cares if you lose 4% on your money for 1 year or 2% for 6 months? If you can preserve your wealth and have something that you're buying insurance with, get physical cash. I would get $20 bills and less, including rows of quarters and things that you could barter for milk with, because 260 or 70 million people out there, the first thing they're going to take is not your check, not a credit card, but they're going to want physical cash. The gold and silver will kick in a little bit later. Alternative Y2K asset allocation strategies are tax-deferred annuities. We have some things at the booth. I don't have them out on the table, but if you like tax-deferred annuities, I would go with the indexed ones, and you can come to our booth, and we'll be happy to share that with you. The biotical settlements that was written about in the Preserving Wealth book is also, we have a few packages left on that. The tax lien certificates that I'll get to in a few minutes. TED spreads, you can read about. We don't sell those. You'd have to go through a broker. You can read about them in my booklet. Gemstones, I love right now. On the plane coming out, I was telling my son, this is his first, he's just gone to work for me 2 weeks ago after he graduated a year ago from Georgia Tech. and has been with First Union Bank, and I wanted him to work there for 2 or 3 years to get experience, but due to what's going on at Cloud & Associates, I need him now. So this is his first trip, and hopefully you can come by and meet him and my lovely bride of 28 years. It's her first trip to Vail. We finally got the baby out of college, so she had to keep her word to come with me once our baby graduated from college. So we now have them both out, and I did get a raise. The ones laughing know what I'm talking about. And the ones that don't know what I'm talking about, you're going to be crying when the time comes. But what I told Tommy on the way out here, I said, when I go through the air detection, they're going to stop me, and they're going to look at the gold I'm carrying in my briefcase. But I said, they won't open the gemstones. They can't see them. They're invisible. Gemstones are starting to be moved around the world by big money. We have the lowest inventory right now we've ever had, ever dealing in them. We are getting very few from these banks that are repossessing them. And while gemstones do not have liquidity, like gold and silver, money market, and treasury bills, it's still something to have 1% or 2% in, because you can take them anywhere in the world. If the market gets bad enough here, you can transport them, and they do not show up on detection devices in any form or fashion. I've carried over $300,000 of gemstones in a briefcase, and they never even stopped and asked me what was in the briefcase. So I can assure you they're very non-detectable and something worth considering. Now we've talked about some very serious problems. We've got to look at the other side of the coin, because it wouldn't be fair to not give you what the people that say that Y2K is either a non-event or a little bump in the road. Even though I don't believe that, let's look at what they're saying. If Y2K doesn't take on a global depression, as Dr. Yardini and myself are predicting, like the 1930s and what's going on in Japan since 1989, they've now been in an 8-year decline for the most powerful economic country. Only 9 years ago, the real estate on a country 16% the size of the United States was more valuable than the United States. Today, the value of the real estate in America is 120 times that of Japan. If that's not an eye-opening figure, I don't know what is. But if we don't have that global recession, and we get the Y2K dividend that you hear people talking about, increased productivity, we get rid of 500 computer languages, everybody gets on the same page, if productivity goes up, and all of a sudden we have this great environment to go buy stocks again, companies become more lean and mean, they've had to lay people off, and now we've got increased productivity, therefore stock market must go up. And that's certainly a valid argument. And the demographics, the one that most people point to, is there is 64 million baby boomers born between 1946 and 1960. And of these 64 million baby boomers, we're going to need to rebuild our retirement, because we don't trust Social Security. And therefore, we may get a little more aggressive when this Y2K dilemma is over. So there is some hope at the end of the tunnel when we move in. But I hope that each of you move in with a full deck and not a half deck of your portfolio by taking steps today to be safe. We know there'll be government incentives to rebuild the economy. There always are. They'll give you certain taxes, let you buy new equipment, where you can write it off in 1 year and not depreciate it. There'll be a lot of incentives coming out, which will be good and will encourage businessmen to increase their spending and get in hiring of new people and trying to drive the economy again. And the main thing is, and please today, leave here with this in mind, is there is going to be an evaporation of excess debt. You have heard about it, but it never hurts to drive it into you again, because it is something, in my opinion, that can't be over-talked enough. In 1980, 18 short years ago, we had Ronald Reagan go in as president, and we had fired Mr. Carter because we had $2.6 trillion in debt running throughout the fiber of this country, which included the consumer, you and me, which included the government, which included real estate debt, foreign debt, corporate bond debt, municipal bond debt, $2.6 trillion. Today, or let's say not today, let's put June the 30th, 1998, 18 years later, the debt had grown to $24 trillion. And the reason is interest rates have gone down for 18 years, and we've all gone out and we financed municipalities, we financed corporations, we watched corporations and corporate takeover, we've watched it expand. It's been great and wonderful, but now there's a contraction coming. Remember the musical chairs we played when we were kids? I would go to vacation Bible school. My mother would drag me down there 4 years, and I would ring around the chairs. It was my favorite game we played at Bible school. And then we'd always get mad if we didn't get the last chair. And it's kind of like that right now. If you're in the wrong chair, you're going to lose in this evaporation of debt. I'm getting ready to tell you something you won't believe. Every 300 points, the Dow Jones goes down. Now, this is in all the stock markets, but as a barometer, every 300 points, the Dow goes down. If you had an equal loss in the other indexes, we lose $1 trillion. Where does it go? It evaporates. It's just gone. I mean, it's this excess debt that you've driven up by having confidence in a company or a stock or a municipality. There's nothing to back it. It's fiat currency. So what happens is we have seen in 6 weeks $4 trillion, trillion with a T, disappear in net worth of Americans. And probably most of you here have had a decrease in your net worth the last 6 weeks. If you haven't, you'd be one of the very few in the audience that hasn't. So you are a part of that game. It has evaporated. But after this thing evaporates 8, 10, 12, $15 trillion, it's going to be a good time to go back in. So this is a good point, and one that I do agree with, that there will be life after the Y2K disaster. And then the legal community, we all know, will be the Y2K's biggest winner. You can go to our website. There's been 182 Y2K lawsuits already filed. There's a website that you can follow. I cannot wait till the morning of January the 3rd, 2000, and see how many lawsuits have been filed from the 180 today. Tax lien certificates are a product that we've worked on very hard for several months to give our clients protection in the fixed income area. A tax lien certificate is against real property. They're created when property owners become delinquent on their taxes. If you don't pay your taxes for 1 year, in 5 states in particular, they will then auction your house on the courthouse steps, and we will go in and buy it, and your name will be on the deed in common with TLC Marketing. Your name will be on a specific piece of property. This is not a mutual fund, and you have collateral. Now, what many of you don't know is that after a county treasurer sells his house, 6 months, if the person doesn't pay it off, what happens is the tax lien certificate is senior to the mortgage. 94.6% of the time in America, the mortgage company comes in and pays the lien holder off. If for some reason the mortgage company didn't pay the lien holder off, you would get the house for $20,000 maybe for a $100,000 house. So you have a 4-to-5-1 collateral on this deal. So these certificates are first position liens on real property, and the only thing senior to a tax lien certificate is the IRS. It's granted by a state statute. This law has been in the books in Texas for over 40 years. In the other states that we use are Hawaii, Oregon, Georgia, and Minnesota, where they have new powerful statutes for us to go into. What makes tax liens a sound investment? It's like real estate being location, 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 research, research, and research. And I won't go through all these in the essence of time, but we have someone that does 3 appraisals, 3 different companies on the property, and go in before they're ever bought and put into your name. If you look at the concept from your perspective, you're only going to pay about one-third of what the property is worth. Remember, we've talked about fiat currency, so you have a collateral, and a bond is a promise to pay, the good faith of a corporation. You have very little hard. If a book value of a corporation is 5-1, you have 20 cents on your dollar, or one-fifth behind it, where in this you have 300%, not 20%, backing your fixed income product with the deed in your name. Remember, the total contract is 385 days that you're in to the tax lien certificate, and the ownership of the property, as I said, is with you and TLC. In the rare instance that we get a foreclosure, we have negotiated this where you don't have to worry about it. We will quit claim the deed directly to TLC, and we will still get our returns that we're promised that we'll get to in a minute. For the ones of you that have appreciated real estate, especially in the areas of income-producing real estate, you're thinking about selling it, you need to get a good facilitator up front, list your business property, and then you could sell it and get a 1031-like exchange. This is an area that does take some homework and one that's in more depth to go into. I can't go into from up here, but we would put you in touch with a facilitator where you're sure you list your property and then the other property, and you get a like exchange because of the ownership. And we've seen people go into these that have had a $1 million piece of property that owed like $300,000 of taxes. They can make a like exchange and make their return off the $1 million. How liquid is your money? 385-day contract. You get your interest every 6 months. When the end of each contract comes, we roll it over. You can only surrender your principal and earned interest for a catastrophic event, or if you or your wife have to go into a nursing home. You do have an option to roll the principal tax-free or tax-deferred, not tax-free. In other words, if you don't want the income for a year, you can let it go out 18 months and continue to roll it and not have any tax consequence. If the earnings are left untouched, they can turn into long-term capital gains. What can go wrong? What's bad about a tax lien? The largest drop in real estate in American history was in early 80s back in Houston, where the real estate market went down 45% in 1 year. Your property would have to drop 70% in 6 months before you would have any risk whatsoever, and then TLC would have to go under, which seems nearly impossible because they would never walk away from the kind of profits that they're making on their 1/12 that they receive of the available operating capital. What can TLCs do for you as an investor? They can provide you a safe, conservative investment, liquid every 385 days with much higher returns than the market, potential tax-deferred growth, and a step-up basis at death that we can get into you with individually. To compare them, look at the asset classes that you can choose from in fixed income products. CDs, bonds, tax-free bonds, and tax lien certificates. The yield on the tax lien certificates is over double with more collateral than you can get in any of the other areas, and you can look down the tax status that you have where it can be ordinary income, but you can also make it into a capital gain. So it's very important that you look at the security and the collateral that you have behind each fixed income instrument that you're buying. TLC guaranteed interest rates right here are unbelievable in the low interest rate environment that we have today. It is a $20,000 minimum investment. We can roll it over into a self-directed IRA. We do have packages you can call the office and get. You can either call our secretary, Louise, or ask for Tommy, and he'll be glad to send you out a more updated kit, about a 6-page deal. But you can see these returns run from 9 to 12% guaranteed by real estate and TLC. charitable trusts are coming soon. Gold is something we love right now. It bottomed. It has a 19-year low as of yesterday, 275. This is the lowest gold's been since May the 30th of 1979. Russia is selling it off. I would strongly urge you to move into gold very quickly. I would put as much as 20%. You've never heard me say over 5%, but gold is going to go up substantially before the end of next year. And right now, to buy gold at $8 below mining cost is a fire sale that we think we'll have in stocks in about 4 years. But I would be buying gold right now. As you look at this, right now it takes 28 ounces of gold to buy one share of the Dow Jones. Back in 1980, when gold got to $850 an ounce, it only took 1 ounce of gold to buy a share of the Dow 30. So you can see it's a great buy. I look for the Dow to come down to maybe 5,000, gold go up to maybe 400 or 500, and you would only have a 10-to-1 ratio. So gold is something we sell. Please, please, please call our office, get a conference call with me set up. 30 minutes, I will call you on my nickel and discuss any of your investments and how you should position it, and also the kind of gold to buy. Please look at the premiums, know the commissions you're paying. We are selling this gold cheaper than anybody I know at our cost plus 3%. We charge you nothing on the back end, and I give you my newsletter free for as long as I write it. So I think that's a pretty good deal. Senator Bob Bennett, we're almost at the end. Opening statement at the Senate Special Committee on June the 12th. The national power grid was the topic. Only 20% of the utility firms surveyed had completed an assessment of their automated systems. Experts have testified before my banking subcommittee that a major firm that has not already completed assessment cannot hope to become Y2K compliant by January the 1st, 2000. A preparedness list, I'm going to flash them up, I don't have time. These are things you need to deal with on preparedness. There, Chuck, at the table over at Compass and K-House has great books to go into preparedness. But the main thing I started with and I want to finish with is the fear factor. Every morning I go into work, the first thing I do is to read Ephesians 6, 10 through 18. Put on the full armor of God that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers and authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Therefore, put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground, and after you have done everything, to stand. Please look at the second to last line, where you may be able to stand your ground. I tell you, there are more passages in the Bible about finances, but sometimes they're not available to you because you don't think that way. You have passages that talk to you. But what God is telling us as Christians, in my opinion, is we need to stand our ground with our investments. We need to stand up to the establishment. We need to tell them we're not going to play into their devilish schemes. We're not going to play into it. We're going to stay on the sidelines. We're going to be very safe. And we're going to put in every day and put on our belt of truth, our breastplate, and go through our 7 items. And we're going to put them on every day. And we're going to stand our ground until this thing is over. And the reason we're going to do that is, no matter what, I don't care what happens during this Y2K fiasco, the only truth that I know for sure, and the one that we can all stand on, is that this tomb that we're looking at is empty. Praise God.
If you'd like information about purchasing this presentation on videotape, or for a tape catalog of all of the Stealing the Mind of America audio or videotapes, or for future conference information, call Compass at 1-800-977-2177. Or you can write to Compass at 460 Canfield Avenue, Suite 1000, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, 83815.